Let's get Lou on. Oh, okay. So we got to say, we got to put the news on, and then we'll be.
That's right. That's right. And the news, I just checked with Jesse. You know, the news is automatically going to come on. Headline news. Wonderful new feature put together by news coordinator Johannes.
This is Renee Reichman with your WSLR news headlines for Friday, October 17th. Mark Smith will have to defend his Sarasota County Commission seat first against a challenger from his own party. Christina Sargent is a former prosecutor in Baltimore and Sarasota and a registered Republican, and she is filed in the race for District 2 election next year. She moved to Sarasota in 2021 to work in the state attorney's office. Sargent's filing means there will be a Republican primary for the district that covers most of the city of Sarasota. The winner of that primary will face a Democrat. Smith won the seat in a tight race against Democrat Fred Atkins 3 years ago. The difference was a few dozen votes. About 1 mile from one of the 6 regional No Kings protests tomorrow, Sarasota will be the statewide ground zero for a Charlie Kirk memorial event. Speakers at Robarts Arena off Fruitville Road include Congressman Greg Stube, Republican State Chair Evan Power, Florida Agricultural Commissioner Wilton Simpson, and future Florida Senate President Jim Boyd. More than 3,000 people have reserved tickets, and the venue was close to sold out as of Thursday. The memorial will begin at 11 a.m., coinciding with the nearby Payne Park No Kings protest. The Sarasota County Commission voted last week to designate a portion of Fruitville Road as Charlie Kirk Memorial Road. The federal government is looking for office space in Tampa, Fort Myers, and other cities for law enforcement operations. A post on the government's contracting website seeks lease proposals in 19 cities, including Tampa, Fort Myers, Fort Lauderdale, and Jacksonville. The post did not specify which agencies are behind the request, but anonymous officials told NPR and the Washington Post that ICE is looking for about 300 properties to lease by this winter. The results are in after a state audit of Manatee County. In a press conference yesterday at downtown Bradenton's Pier 22, Florida Chief Financial Officer Blaise Ingoglia blasted the all-Republican county for exceeding his general budget limit by more than $100 million. He said the county's general budget increased 69% in 5 years, more than the population growth rate, and the county added 472 employees in that time span. This has been Renee Reichman with your WSLR news headlines for Friday, October 17th.
You're listening to WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton, that, by the way, stands for Bradenton's People's Voice. I am Lou Larini, and I'm happy to be joined in the studio with Juan Montenegro and Claire on this Fun Drive Friday, who are helping me run the board. Hey, Juan, how's it going?
Well, how do you like the new studio, my man?
How do you like the new operation here?
Oh, it's space age. It looks fantastic. It's really nice. It's great.
It is, you know, spacey.
You know. I really got to thank you for helping me today. And you know, and just say for the record, even though we've been talking about it, you know, for the last couple of hours, that you and your show will sorely be missed.
Thank you.
Really.
Thank you.
Regular listeners know that on the Surreal News, we try to cover some of the events of the week and offer commentary on those stories that do not necessarily represent the station, its board, or anyone else or any other person who expressed them. I used to just say, you know, do not represent, but I'll tell you, I was doing this a couple of years ago with Tom Walker in the studio, and Tom Walker pointed out to me that a lot of the things you say, you know, are supported by other people in the station. So maybe you ought to add the word necessarily, because you know we do support some of the stuff that you say.
No, you know? Sure. So, most of it.
You know, yeah. You know, today's big story, of course, is the Fall Fun Drive, whose theme is Hear It Here, which is not just about what is on the radio, but the community it represents. We are the people's voice because it is you, the listener, who we are beholden to, not some faceless corporation or other murky entity that controls our programming. You hear that, Brendan? Please help us turn up the volume of this important voice by contributing what you can. Our commitment to supporting peace, justice, diversity, and the real American way was never as important as it is now. So call 941-894-6469 or give online at WSLR.org. Agreed?
941-894-6469. All the staff is here now from Jesse on down. So everybody's here waiting for your phone call to accept your donation in the fall membership drive.
Yeah, you know, and stay tuned until about half past the hour to hear co-host Steve Norris's interview with Mel Goodman, author, former CIA analyst, and professor who offers some observations about the state of our foreign policy and how that might impact us. And from what I understand, you know, he's going to be talking an awful lot about the peace agreement in, you know, Israel, you know, with, you know, Israel and the Palestinians,
right.
and you know, as, and I'm sure, as usual, I haven't heard it all, you know, Mel will give us some great insight into you know, what's really going on, you know, smart guy. The other big story this week is tomorrow's No Kings demonstrations that are scheduled for more than 2,500 sites across the nation. And from what I read, at least 80 in Florida. Here in Sarasota and Manatee counties, it will be a demonstration at 5584 Cortez Road in Bradenton from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And that's kind of, if you don't know Bradenton or Cortez, that's near where the Big Lots store is. And so there's, you know, shopping center right there, you know, fronting where everybody, you know, gathers.
Along
Cortez Road. Yes,
right.
Cortez.
Mm-hmm.
Cortez and Manatee are the two main, you know, east to west drags. And so there's plenty of parking in the shopping center.
It's 2 hours, though.
It's just going to run 2 hours. Mm-hmm. It runs 2 hours.
But in the rest of the country, what do you think?
Well, in Sarasota, you know, there's going to be an event scheduled at Payne Park at 2010 Adams Lane, and that's going to run from 9 to 12.
Okay.
You know, and as far as the rest of the country goes, you know, there are, in fact, you know, if you just go online and Google No Kings, you'll find that there's a bunch of them, you know, and there's going to be one in Englewood. There's going to be, you know, another one in another site in Venice. I don't know what's going on down in Charlotte County, you know, but I would not be shocked, to know that, there'd be one going on in Punta Gorda.
Right.
You know, you know, No Kings is very important. It's very important, at least in my opinion, to get your body out there to be seen. You know, and, you know, from what I understand, according to headline news, you know, there's going to be a competing event that day, which I wasn't really totally aware of. You know, I knew there was going to be a Charlie Kirk Memorial, but I didn't know it was going to be Saturday, and that's going to be at Robarts Arena, you know, and, you know, they claim to have sold 3,000 tickets for it.
We'll see.
You know, and we'll see, you know, but, you know, I know the last No Kings, you know, event, you know, on June 14th, I believe, that occurred in Sarasota. You know, we matched that just here in Sarasota, and that wasn't counting, you know, probably the close to 1,000 people that gathered, on Cortez Road at the same place now in Manatee counties. So, you know, yeah, we're there. We're out and we're proud. And
you gotta take it to the streets. You gotta take it to the streets.
Absolutely. Gotta let these guys know that, you know,
gotta take it to the streets.
We're serious, you know, and that this is, well, serious. What's going on just isn't right. And, you know, I believe people, you know, need to be reminded of the history of it. You know, that, you know, we fought a war to avoid being under the rule of a king. You know, but one thing you can do to make sure that, you know, everybody knows and continues to learn about this is to keep us on the air. So don't forget, call 941-894-6469 or give online at WSLR.org and hit that big donate button. You know, I'll tell you what, you know, I got a little news story here, Juan, that I want to read. You know, while, you know, Republicans claim demonstrators are paid and Democrats are purposely not stopping the shutdown to allow for these demonstrations. You know, I mean, is that preposterous? I know, you know, I've been to several of these demonstrations and I haven't got a check yet.
No.
So I don't know about you, Juan. Have you gotten any checks?
No.
Okay.
It's
ridiculous. You know, two of Donald Trump's cabinet secretaries said Democrats are keeping the government closed for the sake of no King's mass demonstrations that are scheduled for tomorrow. Comments made on the same Fox Business show on October 13th echoed congressional Republicans last week who blamed the two-week-long shutdown on Democrats, saying they wanted to keep the government closed until after the protests, hoping to show party activists they're pushing back on the Trump administration. In criticizing rallies, Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent said, "No kings means no paychecks, no paychecks, and no government." Liberal groups have criticized elected Democrats for not doing enough in Congress to resist Trump's changes to the federal government. Senate Democrats are refusing to approve a short-term funding measure for the federal government, demanding Republicans restore large cuts to the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, and Medicaid, that will cost millions of people their health insurance. No kings are scheduled, as I noted before, at more than 2,500 locations across the country, and one of several flagship protests is planned outside the U.S. Capitol. Previous protests held by the same organizations over the last year included the June 14th rally, also named No Kings, and they've been peaceful and drawn massive crowds. Rally organizers told USA Today that they're expecting crowds to joyfully and peacefully celebrate their First Amendment right to protest. They've used their comments to draw more attention to the upcoming events. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy told Fox he expects millions of attendees to be part of Antifa-paid protests. It begs the question of who's funding it. On October 10th, several congressional Republicans referred to the protests as Hate America rallies and accused Democrats of keeping the government closed at the request of the activists. House Speaker Mike Johnson, the Republican from Louisiana, said on Fox News that Republicans were hearing that Democrats wouldn't open the government until after the rallies because they can't face their rabid base. We're rabid, Juan. The base is rabid. And the House does remain in recess. And Johnson said he's tired of waiting for Democrats to agree to the shutdown. Of course, you know, Johnson doesn't mention the fact that he still hasn't seated, the Democratic rep from Arizona that just recently got elected in a special election because she's going to be the swing vote that's going to force them to, vote on whether the Epstein files are going to be, You talk about a little sleight of hand, whether the Epstein files are, going to be ever released. And you know, even though I'm kind of going off the cuff here a little bit because I hadn't even really planned to talk so much about the hypocrisy of the Epstein files, but you know as well as I do, the Republicans, particularly their staunch supporters in the Manoverse, you know, including, you know, both the FBI director and his assistant, Cash Patel and Bongino, when they had their little podcasts, were crying for the Epstein files to be released. I mean, this is the QAnon thing. This is the whole thing, the Epstein files. Epstein, perhaps, you know, the greatest pedophile, you know, in the history of the world. I mean, they wanted it released because, you know, the implication was that was where all those Democrats were going to get the babies to drink their blood or whatever. You know, the whole Pizzagate thing. Well, now that they have the power and they can release them, they aren't releasing them. I wonder why not. You know, I guess Nancy Pelosi didn't like, you know, drink the blood of babies to make herself last longer or not age. I mean, this is some of the preposterous stuff that these people were saying. But, you know, I mean, as one guy said, and this is, I guess, Hunter Dunn, a national spokesperson for the 5051 protest group, you know, said that he finds the Republican rhetoric kind of funny. He said, you know, you got to kind of pick which lie you're going with. The enemy can't be simultaneously both weak and strong, you know, which is kind of something that was going on. But anyways, that's I digress a little bit, you know, but that's the craziness. But anyway, though, his sort of a public service announcement. You know, if you do plan to go to a No Kings rally, you know, you need to know some things about the law, you know, and what you can and you can't do. And while this isn't a complete all-inclusive list of things or advice, you know, it's some things that you need to be aware of. You know, first of all, you know, protests are protected by the First Amendment, but protesters maybe want to keep an eye on the road. In June, ahead of the last No Kings protest, Governor DeSantis said Floridians have a right to hit protesters with their car if they feel threatened, and state and local officials said rioting could bring jail time, even death. We also have a policy that if you're driving on one of these streets and a mob comes and surrounds your vehicle and threatens you, you have the right to flee for your safety, DeSantis said on the Rubin Report on June 11th. So if you drive off and you hit one of these people, that's their fault for impinging on you. And he also added, if you throw a brick, a firebomb, or point a gun at one of our deputies, we will be notifying your family where to collect your remains, because we will kill you, graveyard dead, he said in that June press conference. What a tough guy. What a tough guy. You know, I guess that made the lifts in his cowboy boots tingle when he gets to say stuff like that. Just, you know, anyway, you know, if you do, though, plan to attend or participate in a protest in Florida, you know, here's what you ought to know. You know, that public protests are protected by the First Amendment and are legal in public areas, providing you're not blocking car or pedestrian traffic or blocking access to government buildings. However, Florida law further restricts where protests can happen, and they come down hard on anything law enforcement perceives as rioting. A sweeping anti-riot bill in 2021 was temporarily blocked in the courts for being potentially unconstitutional, chilling against free speech and overly vague about what defines a riot. But the Florida Supreme Court ruled in favor of the new law in 2024, and an appeals court allowed the state to enforce it. As of this year, Florida also has as known as the HALO law, H-A-L-O, which requires anyone to move 25 feet from a first responder, including law enforcement if asked. The law is intended to protect first responders, but critics worry that it will prevent anyone from shooting video or pictures of ICE arrests or police brutality. The law does not prohibit constitutionally protected activities such as peaceful protests, according to the Florida statutes. That said, the state does have restrictions. Protesters are not permitted to willfully obstruct free, convenient, and normal use of any public street, highway, or road. Gatherings of three or more people to commit a break of the peace or commit unlawful acts is considered unlawful assemblies and a second-degree misdemeanor. Knowingly protesting within 500 feet of a residence, cemetery, funeral home, house of worship, or other location where a funeral or burial is occurred will occur soon, is a first-degree misdemeanor. And a riot is defined as a violent public disturbance involving three or more people acting to assist each other in other violent and disorderly conduct. It is a third-degree felony. Okay, and, you know, can you shine laser pointers at police helicopters?
No, no.
Absolutely not.
No.
Absolutely not. And those are just a few of the things. You know, obviously, you can't raise a hand to anybody who is law enforcement. But then again, to the one, you know, you got to ask, you know, you are going back to Chicago with,
yes,
where there, you know, going to be a lot of ICE folk there. And so if they're wearing a bulletproof vest and a mask and they don't have any name tag with like a badge on it, how do you know they're law enforcement and they're not just some guy looking to make trouble? You know, I mean, that's a real question for me.
Yeah.
So
many unknowns.
So many more.
Right.
So, all right. So, what's going on here?
You want to read that? I just handed it by Jesse.
Okay. And here we go. Special treat for this hour on the Surreal News. Our friends at Boulevard Cafe have generously supported the WSLR Vogtyville Fall Membership Drive with food for our volunteers, and they just brought in three $10 gift cards to share with our listeners. If you make a donation of $60 or more before 10 o'clock, you'll receive one of these Boulevard Cafe gift certificates while supplies last. Just give us a call at 941-894-6469. And let us know you'd like to receive that gift certificate benefit when you make your pledge. It's a great way to support local community radio and enjoy something delicious from one of Florida's favorite cafes. More information can be found at WSLR.org. Awesome. That is great. Wow. Time is flying as I look at this. All right. Wait a minute. Let me stagger over here. Okay. And also, too, you know, this is also time where, you know, even though I've already kind of done it, but I sketched out that it's like it's the middle of the half hour, and this is time for me to do station identification. And this is WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. And WSLR LP is celebrating its 21st birthday this year, so I guess that makes it an adult. And its younger sister station, WBPVLP, and events-based Fogartyville, needs your help to continue to offer the community a place that both physically at Fogartyville and on the airwaves come together to learn, create, explore, and just plain enjoy cool music and thought-provoking broadcasts and shows. So please help us keep the show on the air by donating what you can and by calling 941-894-6469 or giving online at WSLR.org. And also too, though, you know, definitely consider becoming an Evergreen member. Evergreen members are, folks that, you know, sign up for $5 or $10 a month, every month, and that helps us out a lot. And it's, you know, the way I look at it is it's a subscription, you know, it's a monthly subscription, just like what you pay for Netflix or Disney or Hulu or whatever else you got. But I think the value here, you know, while those are entertaining and can be worth it, I think $5 for all the programming that you can get in a month from WSLR is kind of a deal.
You know, something else that we haven't spoken about here is our newspaper, is Critical Times newspaper. And because this is something that we do quarterly, we release this newspaper on a quarterly basis. So the last edition of the year, October, November, and December, has just come out. And if you'd like to be a distribution point for Critical Times, give us a call too, and a volunteer will be happy to drive it over. It's a free paper, and it's not just a boosterist type of publication. It's not just a fluff piece backing tourism and retirement. It's not that kind of a thing, but it's a really in-depth printed piece put together by the WSLR News Department and the people that work in that department. So just call the same number if you want to be a distribution place for for critical times, 941-894-6469. And ask for Johannes, 941-894-6469, or Kathleen. Kathleen or Johannes, 894-6469.
Okay. All righty. As I noted before, I mean, there is going to be, some memorial for Charlie Kirk in Sarasota, but the Manatee County Commissioners voted unanimously this week to name a road after the controversial right-wing podcaster and Sarasota resident Charlie Kirk, who was killed last month. But the reaction to the move is mixed. Commissioner Jason Bearden proposed the naming. We're talking about a man who will be in our history books, such as people like Martin Luther King, Bearden said. During the meeting, Commissioner McCann expressed some concern due to mixed public comments. I think before we make any decision of this importance, that we have as much input as we possibly can, McCann said. Other areas like Lake and Sarasota counties have moved to name roads after Kirk. Ahead of the meeting, a resident named Bob wrote a letter to the commission encouraging them to consider a more suitable candidate. He doesn't want his last name used because he's afraid of backlash from Kirk's supporters. He denigrated women. He denigrated minorities. He denigrated gays. It really isn't an inclusion point of view, Bob told, and this was a story from WMNF that he told WMNF. However, he said that he's not surprised by the decision. What troubled me is that I feel there are so many other people more deserving of a memorial than this gentleman, Bob said. The road is set to be a planned section of 51st Street West. So if I understand commissioners correctly, if you're a conservative activist who is credited with mobilizing young voters to come out for he who would be king, we should be naming streets after him. How about all of us who also live in Bradenton and who don't agree with him or his king? So I guess that's not a good thing. all righty. All right. We are in line now. All right. What do we got for time here? Yeah, we got enough time. And voting rights, I guess, have come under attack again. By the Supreme Court this time, and this is something to be really aware of. It probably these kinds of moves answer the riddle, that some people have about how can this administration, keep doing things that poll to be wildly unpopular among the American people and still expect to succeed in elections. Well, the elections just aren't going to be fair, and this is one thing that they're doing. The U.S. Supreme Court this week heard a Republican-led challenge to the Voting Rights Act again, giving its conservative majority a chance to deal yet another blow to the landmark federal law enacted 60 years ago to prevent racial discrimination in voting. This case involves electoral districts in Louisiana and the arguments that come into appeal by a group of black voters of a judicial decision declared that a map that raised the number of black majority congressional districts in the state from 1 to 2 violated the constitutional promise of equal protection because it was guided too much by racial considerations. Louisiana, where black people make up roughly a third of the population, has 6 U.S. House districts. Black voters tend to support Democratic candidates. Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act bars electoral marks, maps that would result in diluting the clout of minority voters. Even absent direct proof of racist intent, this provision gained greater significance as a bulwark against racial discrimination in voting after the Supreme Court, in a 2013 ruling authored by conservative Chief Justice John Roberts, gutted a different section of the Voting Rights Act. If the court similarly hollows out Section 2, according to Harvard Law professor Nicholas Stephanopoulos, the consequences could be drastic. Now, if I understand this correctly, the original purpose of the Voting Rights Act was an attempt to give minority voters a chance to pick their own representation in government. That was necessary after decades of Jim Crow era state legislators worked hard to nullify minority voters. Starting with the end of the Civil War, when freed slaves suddenly became a majority, and in some states such as Mississippi, where they were the home of large plantations with hundreds of enslaved people and only a few owners and their families, white residents knew that one vote, one person was just not going to cut it for them. The only way to correct those inequities was to say out loud, blacks in particular were not going to get a fair shot, and laws needed to protect their rights. So now, admitting the law was effective in helping black people to have their voice is somehow unfair to white people. It needs to change. One needs only look around our society to see who, in large majority, occupy the best positions. Okay. I think we're getting to... All right. All right. Stay tuned. Okay. This is WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton, your community radio station that offers listeners a variety of music that must satisfy even the most eclectic tastes, as evidenced by Juan's show that preceded this show. Where else in the dial can you find as expert a selection of Latin music? But that's just the tip of the musical iceberg.
And you're listening to Surreal News
on WSLR. Yes, we are listening to Surreal News, and stay tuned to hear Steve Norris's interview with Mel Goodman. Okay. All right. We will be getting that momentarily. It is there up on the board somewhere. I think there might be something on the board that you need to open up that takes me off the air and puts that on.
So my name is Steve Norris, and you're listening to WSLR 96.5 LPFM and WBCV 100.1 FM. This is your news and public affairs show. And as the world is looking to see what's going on with Israel and trying to understand it, we have Mel Goodman joining us today. Good day, Mel.
Good to talk to you again, Steve.
And yes, this is our Fund Drive show. We will be asking for contributions during the show. I just want to mention Mel is a senior fellow at the International Policy for the Center for International Policy and professor of government at Johns Hopkins University. He's written many books, including A Whistleblower at CIA, and his columns can be seen regularly at counterpunch.org, where he's a national security columnist. Well, with your background, you have a unique perspective to what's going on with Israel. So please share with us your views.
Well, this agreement is being branded about as a peace plan. It's anything but a peace plan. And I think the best thing to do is to cite something that JFK said, which is peace is not a matter of war or men fighting or not fighting. Peace is a genuine condition of justice and order. And there's no reason to think there's going to be any justice or order that comes from this plan. One thing that I think an audience needs to know, because this is the kind of background that never appears in the mainstream media, is that for the past 110 years, there have been one act of betrayal of the Palestinians after another. It started in World War I when the Ottoman Empire was collapsing, and a secret agreement was negotiated between Britain and France to basically redraw the map of the Middle East to suit their own ends and to define where the British and French would have influence. The British, of course, had influence in Palestine. A year after that, there was a Balfour delegation, or declaration, that called for the establishment of a Jewish homeland in what was then Palestine. And there were probably three or four times the population of Palestinians versus Jews in the land at that time. Even as late as the 1930s, when there was an Arab revolt, there were about 900,000 Palestinians in the territory and less than 300,000 Jews in the territory. So Arab independence was never going to be accounted for. So when Israel was finally given its independence in 1948, this led to the forced removal of more than 700,000 Palestinians from their homes. This is what the Arabs refer to as the Nakba. And the Nakba, which means catastrophe in Arabic, is as meaningful to Arabs today as the Holocaust is to Israelis and American Jews and the diaspora in general. So in 1956, when Britain and France, in sort of their last gasp of colonialism in the Middle East, wanted to invade Egypt to take back and nationalize, or at least internationalize, the Suez Canal, Israel was part of that conspiracy. They were designed to move first toward the canal, and the British and French were claiming that they were going in to oppose Israeli intervention in Egypt. And of course, that was not the case. But what it told Arab nations, Arab states, is that Israel was part of the British and French colonial independence and takeover of the Arab world. And even in the Six-Day War, which was described as a preemptive attack, the Israelis didn't act preemptively. There was no sign whatsoever that Egypt or Syria were going to use military force. After all, Egypt had its planes parked on runways wingtip to wingtip, which is why Israel's Air Force had so much success in annihilating the Egyptian Air Force. As far as ground troops, most of the best combat forces Egypt had in its military were in Yemen as part of a civil war that's accounted, that's continued to this day. So when you get to 1993 and the Oslo Peace Accords, which people mention all the time, there was never a chance that a Palestinian state was going to be formed, but it was clear that Jewish settlers knew this and saw it as an opportunity to move quickly to create illegal settlements throughout the territories. So now we have what's called a peace plan. The mainstream media treats it as a peace plan. The Washington Post referred to it as a visible path to a generational accomplishment. Well, that's just not the case. There's no peace, and there should be no prize. And certainly Donald Trump should not get any real acclaim for anything other than maybe the release of the hostages. So if you look at the peace plan as two parts, the first part, you could say, is successful to a point. There has been a ceasefire. It appears to be holding. Hamas has released all of the living hostages, 20 of them. They haven't returned all of the 28 bodies of the deceased hostages because it's not clear they can find them all. Some are under the rubble, probably killed by Israeli bombing raids, and some are being held by other groups more terroristic than even Hamas, groups such as Islamic Jihad. So clearly the Palestinians have been betrayed. So for Donald Trump to talk about a dawn of a new era in the Middle East, no, it's not the dawn of a new era, and it's not one of the greatest days at any time in civilization, which is something he has also said. Because you have to remember, when you look at those elements of phase two, it's very vague, it's very ambiguous. He claims he's creating a board of peace and that he's going to be chairman, but he's not going to have anything to do with the board of peace. That role is going to be given to Tony Blair, the former Prime Minister of England. Blair is detested by the Arab states because they know of his support for George W. Bush in the war against Iraq, which was based on a series of lies regarding weapons of mass destruction. Regarding statehood, the plan said nothing. Regarding an international stabilization force, who's going to be a part of that force? Who's going to be sent into Gaza to assure some kind of security? Will Egypt play that role? Will Jordan? Will Qatar? They haven't stepped up. Turkey supports the agreement, but Turkey hasn't stepped up to take a role on the ground. And now you have Donald Trump in a remark that he made just this week saying if the Hamas does not disarm, we're going to go in and disarm them, and it's going to be violent. Well, what does he mean by that, and how in the world is the U.S. military going to involve itself in a possible clash between Hamas and Israel's defense forces once again? So there are a lot of things that Trump has said that aren't aligned with what Netanyahu has said, because he's not talking about a Palestinian state. He's not talking about a Palestinian authority role in Hamas. So there's tremendous uncertainty about what is really going to come out of this so-called peace plan. But to call it a peace plan is really aspirational, like the Palestinian state itself.
Thank you, Mel, for giving us an excellent background. Thank you so much. And you're listening to WSLR. Mel Goodman is speaking with us today. This is our fund drive, and we do have volunteers. They're standing by the phones. So if you can please get on your phone and call 941-894-6469. Please pledge to support us, because we are virtually completely listener-supported. Mel, as we get back to this topic, it's unclear who actually is representing the Palestinians. Is that correct?
Well, it's not clear who they've talked to about the peace plan. It was negotiated between U.S. and Israel. Egypt had a lot to do with it. Qatar had a lot to do with it. And presumably Qatar passed along some of the ideas in the peace plan to the Palestinians, some of whom live in Qatar. But it was never really shown to the Palestinians. In fact, when Trump gave his talk at Sharm el-Sheikh in Egypt to announce the agreement, Palestinians were never mentioned. In fact, one of the gratuitous remarks he made is his credit that he took for this agreement, saying that the Democratic Party never could have done this because Democratic presidents had hatred toward Israel. Where in the world has he come to these statements? How does he create this kind of language? And even when you look at Israeli withdrawal, it's not clear how far they're going to go. It's going to be much more than what they call a security perimeter. No timelines were established. And the Philadelphia Corridor, which is the important area that separates Egypt and Gaza, there's no mention of Israel ever leaving that area. So when he talks about technocrats to implement the agreement, who are these technocrats? Just as I would say the Board of Peace. Who's on this board other than Trump, the chairman, and Tony Blair, the so-called enforcer? So you have all sorts of conditions that beg for an answer, and the one I would put at the top that shows how meaningless this agreement is to talk about the reconstruction of Gaza, which goes back to Trump's remark about creating the Riviera of the Middle East in Gaza. Well, the Israelis have never let serious reconstruction equipment go into Gaza. Why do we think that they will let that happen now? And the estimates are that it would take $50 to $70 billion over a matter of years just to clean up the rubble. After all, if you look at pictures of Gaza, it looks like Berlin in 1945 or Leningrad in 1943. So there are all these uncertainties that don't involve Palestinian leadership and no real role for the Palestinian Authority.
Wow, that certainly is a lot to swallow here. And I guess just furthermore about sort of the Palestinians and who is representing them, do they really have a leader? Do we know?
There is one Palestinian from Hamas who's considered the leader, Khalil Halal. Well, he was the target of the Israeli attack on Qatar last month, in which they tried to assassinate him from the air. And it turns out that they didn't kill any members of Hamas, but they did kill the son of Halal, and they killed a couple citizens of Qatar. This is what forced Trump, in one act of pressure he did place on Netanyahu, and some of your audience may have seen this, the video of Netanyahu essentially being forced to call the head of the state of Qatar to apologize for that bombing raid. This is clearly something that did anger Donald Trump. And when the phone call was made, Netanyahu was holding the earpiece up to his ear, but the phone itself was resting on the lap of Donald Trump, which I think demonstrated that it took the United States to make sure that Trump got Netanyahu to issue what I think was a very insincere apology. But it was, I think, a turning point. Qatar is very important to the United States. It's a small nation, but it's an influential nation that's used a lot of its resources to fund international agreements, but more importantly, the largest U.S. military facility in the entire region of the Middle East, the Persian Gulf, is the air base, which has about 10,000 Americans. So, once again, the Palestinians weren't really consulted. Netanyahu was trying to annihilate the leading negotiator. When the agreement was signed in Sharm el-Sheikh, Trump tried to persuade Netanyahu to come, and Netanyahu refused to do so. I think one thing that has never been mentioned in the press that I believe is an important issue, the Israeli Defense Forces didn't want to continue the fight in Gaza. Their role was accomplished over a year ago in terms of demilitarizing Hamas to the greatest extent possible. They were opposed to Netanyahu's continuation of the war, which he was continuing because he wants to stay out of jail. He's faced court action for the past 5 years, charges of fraud and bribery. And I think Netanyahu was more concerned about the Israeli Defense Forces being divided than the so-called right wing in his cabinet, people like Ben-Gvir, who manages national security, and Smotrich, who is the finance minister and therefore controls the funding for the West Bank, where the Israelis continue to steal territory from Palestinian communities to form illegitimate and illegal settlements. So that's something should be kept in mind before we assign Trump a peace agreement, a Nobel Peace Prize, for a peace that hasn't been created. Remember, what's needed is trust and confidence. And there's no reason to think that Hamas is going to trust the Israelis, who broke an important ceasefire in March that was leading toward a release of hostages. That's why the Israeli community was so angry and demonstrating so forcefully, because they knew Netanyahu had a chance to get hostages out while they were continuing to die and be mistreated in the tunnels of Gaza. So that's an important consideration.
All right, we're listening to Mel Goodman, former CIA analyst and Professor Johns Hopkins. And if you think that independent media like this is important, please push back against the fall of independent media by supporting this station, Truly Independent WSLR, in Sarasota and WBPV in Bradenton. We are your weapon of mass instruction, and Surreal News and the Harding working members of our entire WSLR local news team, we need your support. So please pick up the phone and call 941-894-6469. Again, that's 941-894-6469. If you prefer, you can also go on the internet and get us at our website. It's WSLR.org, and you can contribute online there as well.
And as someone who does a lot of these interviews, I can vouch for how important Steve Norris's show and WSLR are, because they promote ideas that you just don't see in the mainstream media, which is based on a lot of conventional wisdom, but doesn't explore alternatives to the scenarios that are taking place around the globe. Another example of that would be what's happening in Venezuela. I think Trump's going to have trouble getting a Nobel Peace Prize because we're about to consider covert action in Venezuela to remove the President Maduro. This week marked the destruction of about the fifth or sixth vessel that was in the Caribbean, reportedly carrying drugs, even though we don't know any of that. We don't have any evidence of who was on these ships, what they were carrying on these ships. But what the mainstream media needs to tell you is that the drugs that go into the United States don't come, for the most part, on sea. They come by air and they come by truck. And the ones that come by sea don't come from the Caribbean. They come from the Pacific. So we're being fed a lot of distortions and deceit to justify a possible war with Venezuela, which clearly Secretary of State Marco Rubio, who should be familiar to all of your listeners, is campaigning for. He's apparently won a battle within the bureaucracy between himself and Richard Grenell, who recognizes that Venezuela, which has the largest reserves of oil in the world, keep that in mind, wanted to negotiate with Maduro on the basis to get access to that oil. Rubio has been committed to regime change since he became Secretary of State. And now he occupies the position of Secretary of State and National Security Advisor and is in the position to authorize a presidential memorandum, which I'm told is being worked on now, that could lead to a covert action program in Venezuela that would indeed remove Maduro from power, not unlike what the CIA and the Nixon administration did in Chile in 1972-1973. So there's a lot more turmoil that is around the corner. Turmoil over Venezuela, turmoil over Gaza and how the Palestinians will regain control of this area. And finally, if we had more time, we could discuss what's happening with the decision that is being worked on to supply Tomahawk missiles to Ukraine. Tomahawk missiles would be a big change for the first time in Ukraine's military fortunes because it has a range of 1,500 miles. Putin has already threatened that if we supply Tomahawk missiles to Ukraine, it will change the nature of the war. So here you have Putin fighting an opponent that has one hand tied behind its back because it doesn't have weapons that can strike the internal part of the Russian state, but we are possibly on the edge of making that decision to supply such weapons. So, as I've been saying right along, it's going to get worse before it gets worse.
All right, Mel, thank you for that. And let me tell our listeners, if you want to have Mel come back on our show, please support this radio station so we can stay on the air by calling 941-894-6469. We do have volunteers standing by to take any contribution, $5, $10, $15, $40 will get you a listener membership, and students can get a membership for $15. Really, whatever you can afford that you feel will have a positive effect for the greater good of our community and the country and the world. So, Mel, in the couple minutes we have left, I just want to thank you again for coming on and encourage everybody to call so we can find out more about what the United States is planning to do in Ukraine. That sounds very interesting there. And tell our listeners where they can get more information if they want to hear more about your subjects.
Well, I write for Counterpunch.org. I'm their national security columnist. I write at least once a week, so Counterpunch.org has archived all of my pieces. My own website, melvingoodman.com, also archives all of my pieces. So there is easy access. And I really thank Steve and his station for what they're doing, because it's important to get these contrarian views in the air in order to broaden the discussion of very controversial events that are not adequately covered by the mainstream media. Remember, if you look at the newspapers around the country, most of what they get that isn't local or domestic news is from the Washington Post or the New York Times. And it's clear to me, and I've talked to journalists who confirm this, that reporters are pulling their punches because they don't want to anger the Trump administration. They're dealing now with censorship that Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth is trying to introduce into reporting from the Pentagon. The Pentagon's budget is approaching $1 trillion. We pay for that. It's taxpayers who pay for that. We're entitled to get news of what the Pentagon is planning. we're entitled to get information about Venezuela, where a lot of people may not realize we've deployed 10,000 troops in Puerto Rico. We've based F-35 fighter jets in the area. We have at least 8 to 10 combat vessels in the area. And we even have an attack submarine in Venezuela. So we may be creeping gradually toward war, while a Congress that should be fighting back on the basis of the War Powers Resolution, because Trump hasn't cleared any of this activity with the Congress, is doing nothing. They're in the pockets of Donald Trump and his administration, while you have a very warlike and bellicose Secretary of Defense who proudly calls himself the Secretary of War, calling the shots of the Pentagon, and a Secretary of State who shows no interest whatsoever in diplomacy, is beating the drums quietly and trying to do so secretly, but the secrets are out now, to take military action against Maduro. So these are very important and challenging times, and stations like WSLR are extremely important.
Great. Thank you for saying that. And again, we are in our fund drive. Our phone number is 941-894-6469. And be sure also to stop by Fogartyville next to the studio for activist events and great value concerts as well. And this has been Steve Norris reporting for WSLR and WBPV News. So my name is Steve Norris, and you're listening to WSLR 96.5 LPFM and WBPV 100.1 FM. This is your news and public affairs show. And as the world is looking to see what's going on with Israel and trying to understand it, we have Mel Goodman joining us today. Good day, Mel.
Good to talk to you again, Steve.
And, yes, this is our Fund Drive show. We will be asking for contributions during the show. I just want to mention Mel is a senior fellow at the
Okay. All right. Thank you, Steve. A couple of times. We are still kind of working out the kinks with the new studio, but
yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah.
It has been a lot of fun. And that was a great interview. It was nice to
looking forward to the developments that tomorrow might bring.
Yeah, I know. This whole business he did bring up. This whole business with Venezuela and this sort of arbitrary using the military to kill people. Yeah, to kill the people who explode these boats. I mean, anybody that's spent any time in the Caribbean, which I have, know that, the distance between Venezuela and the coast of the United States, is pretty far away, and if you're going to be smuggling drugs, in small boats, you're not going to be starting in Venezuela, and driving your go-fast boat all the way to the coast of Miami. I mean, back when that was a time when I lived in South Florida and it was going on, that was a method drug smugglers used to use, but they would bring the freighters off coast and have the cigarette boats load up and run to the coast of Florida. This, of course, was back in the 70s, when I was actually in the boat business. I had a big old sailboat, and me and my crew, we were like young men, and a day didn't go by when someone asked us when we were coming back from Colombia, and my boat, though, was a big old sailboat that went about 10 knots, not even 10 knots, and I'm there like, what are you, crazy? No, we aren't smuggling anything. We're just...
Yeah.
Charter boat guys. But anyway, those were the days. But anyway, when they talk about that, it is just, it's like a provocation. It is a provocation. I mean, it reminds me of, Vietnam, in the Gulf of Tonkin, how Lyndon Johnson used some North Vietnamese gunboats, supposedly threatening, a U.S. ship in the Gulf of Tonkin as a reason to, carpet bomb the whole country. And that wasn't right either. But what we need to do is keep this voice on the air, not mine in particular, but the overall voice of WSLR. LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota, and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton, and you need to make make a donation now by calling 941-894-6469 or going online to WSLR.org.
Which clock are we looking at?
And how are we doing?
Half a minute.
All right. Okay. You know, thanks again, and thanks again, Steve, and thanks again, Juan, and good luck in Chicago, and you know, hope everything works out for you, and hope you do take a vacation and come back and see us again here in South Florida.
Thank you.
You know, that's great.